Welcome to episode 79 of the Practice of Nonprofit Leadership. I'm Tim Barnes.
And I'm Nathan Ruby.
Well, Nathan, it's a new week. Are you ready for all that lies ahead of you?
Yeah, Tim. You know what? I'm actually feeling pretty good. Heading out later today to do a few donor visits this week. I got a nice little donor circle that I'm going to be doing around the state and back. And so I get to spend most of the week doing one of the things that I really enjoy the most about my job. So I am ready to roll.
Well, that doesn't surprise me at all that you'd be excited about spending a few days with donors. Seems like it brings you lots of energy and excitement. Well, as you know, Nathan, this first quarter has been a heavy travel season for me in the nonprofit that I work with. I'm afraid my dogs are starting to think that I'm this guy that rents rooms a few nights a month. so my family doesn't start thinking that.
Yeah, you should try to not come in the door at like 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, you should do it during daylight hours.
Yeah, that would help. But it's interesting. As I was back yesterday, and one of the first emails that I got as I returned was from one of our board members. And his question to me was, is our money safe? Why do you think he would be asking that with all the current things that are happening right now?
Well, you know, Tim, it's been an interesting few weeks. And if you're not keeping track of current events going around the world, we seem to be in a bit of a banking, I hate to use the word crisis, Tim. Let's just say a banking issue or a banking problem. And it's not just here in the U.S. It's all over. It's global. And so, you know, typically, Tim and I like to keep, we would like to record 3, 2, 3, 4 weeks ahead, just to give us a little breathing room. And Tim's travel schedule has been really, really. What is your travel schedule? It's been a lot lately. Mine's ramping back up again, and so we just like to give ourselves a little breathing room when it comes to our episodes. But once in a while, we get a topic that comes up that we think is really important, and so we jump the line in our episodes. And that's what we're doing today. We're going to do a session today on banking. And we're going to talk about three things. One is what's happening to banks right now. What does that mean for small to medium nonprofits? And at the end, we're going to have three simple things that you could do to protect yourself and your organization as the executive director. But first, Tim, I've got a little story I'd like to share.
Okay. I always cringe, but that's all right. No, I'm just kidding. Is it all relevant to what we're talking about, Nathan?
Yes, it actually is. It is very relevant.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, here we go. So a businessman walked into a New York City bank and asked for the loan officer. He said he was going to Europe on business for 2 weeks and needed to borrow $5,000. The loan officer said the bank would need some security for such a loan. So the businessman then handed over the keys to a Rolls Royce that was parked on the street in front of the bank. Everything checked out, and the loan officer accepted the car as collateral for the loan. An employee then drove the Rolls into the bank's underground garage and parked it there. 2 weeks later, the businessman returned, repaid the $5,000 and the interest, which came to $15.41. The loan officer said, "You know, we appreciate your business and this transaction has worked out very nicely, but we're a bit puzzled. While you were away, we did some more checking and we found out that you're a multimillionaire. What puzzles us is why would you bother to borrow the $5,000? The businessman replied, "Oh, where else in New York City can I park my car for 2 weeks for $15?
Okay.
That's a little banking joke there for you.
All right. So
that's our segue into our topic today. And so first of all, what's going on? And before we go any further, just a couple of quick ground rules. And Tim and I are not financial experts. This is not financial advice. We are not banking experts. We are not attorneys. We are none of those things. Banks are regulated both federally and by individual states. And while Tim and I are bringing these up to your attention, Just you really have to do your own due diligence on this topic. And we'll talk about this in a little bit, but you and your board, this is something that you should be paying attention to, but your situation is different than everybody else's. And so you've got to do your own due diligence on this.
And we might share some of the things that our organizations are doing it, but it's very specific to us. If we mention something, as I just want to emphasize what Nathan said, you need to do your own work. Don't just listen to us per se.
Right. So, okay. So in short, here's what's happening. Banks all across the country and globally are having liquidity problems. And in the banking world, and this is the definition from the FDIC's website. So according to the FDIC, liquidity reflects a financial institution's ability to fund assets and meet financial obligations. So financial obligations means when you go to the bank teller and you send in the withdrawal slip and they send you $50 back, or you go to the cash machine and you put your card in and you take $100 back, that is the financial institution meeting their financial obligations, at least to you. And so banks are having liquidity issues because of a combination of interest rates, bond prices, and massive amounts of cash withdrawals from certain banks. And it is a really complicated intersection between interest rates, bond prices, and cash withdrawals. And what happens is several banks over the last couple of weeks have gotten themselves into trouble with their liquidity. The customers found out about it. And all of a sudden, it's kind of like from, It's a Wonderful Life, my wife's favorite Christmas movie. It just had an old-fashioned bank run. And you put those three together, and you've got banks that are failing now, that are going under.
And the massive amount of cash withdrawals that you mentioned really have to do with a little bit of fear. It's like, can the bank actually take care of my money? Can I get a hold of it? I'm going to get it now before it goes under or whatever. So it kind of starts to feed on itself as people start to do that as well, which sounds a bit scary. We always are a little cautious. We're not trying to create a scare. And I know sometimes the media likes a good story and gets people kind of riled up. There is definitely issues, but we are talking about this, not necessarily to scare you, but to begin to think about the impact it could be coming. So we're not saying this is every bank that it's happening to, but it has happened to a few. It probably will happen to a few more before it's all over. And some steps are being taken, but it's kind of a shaky time right now, right, Nathan?
Yeah, it is. And even though it is kind of a shaky time right now, there are some simple things that you could do. And here's what Tim and I suggest. So number one is seek out expert help. Go visit your banker, call them on the phone, whatever, and ask them, have a conversation with them about liquidity issues. And just ask, what is the process if something bad happens? All right. I'm not expecting it to happen, but just share with me if something happens to your bank, what happens to me in my account? When do I have access to it? What is the process? How does that work? And I think the biggest thing is, how long would you have to wait if something happens? So think of it this way. What happens if all of a sudden you can't access your money in your organization's account on Monday morning? How long could you go without being able to have access to that? Could you go a week? Could you go 2 weeks? Could you go a month? Could you go 3 months? I mean, I don't know. I'm in process of doing all these things myself, so I don't even have the answer for my own bank, but I'm working on it. So just have a conversation with your banker and find out what the actual information is. Don't make assumptions.
Well, that's really important, Nathan, because, you may be listening to this podcast. You may say, well, we've got 30,000 in our bank. We're not talking about millions. And so why should we be worried about it? But your point is, if something happens, even at 30,000, you may not be able to access that for a while if something happened. So you'd need to decide, can I make payroll, or can I pay my bills? Can I do the project that we're talking about? So what happens if we find ourselves in this situation?
Yeah, absolutely. So as part of that conversation, confirm with your banker that the bank is part of the FDIC network. And that's the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. So the FDIC, it insures banks. It insures the deposits. Well, let me take that back. It doesn't insure banks. It insures the deposits in the bank. It insures accounts of up to $250,000. All right. That is what the FDIC insures. And that is by account type in the bank. So if you have multiple accounts, so let's say you have your organization's account there and you have your personal account there, there are specific rules that govern that. Again, federal and state laws, go talk to your banker and find out for your personal situation what's going on and make sure that, you know, those insure that one, that the bank is part of the FDIC and that you understand what the rules are for more than one account in the same bank. All right, number two. Talk to your board. This is something that you don't want to take on the responsibility of this on your own as the executive director. And, you know, your board, one of their primary roles is to protect you. They're there to keep you from driving the car off the cliff and not even knowing you're driving off the cliff. They're there to save your bacon. But they can't do that if they don't know what you're doing. So first of all, communicate with your board. And this is what I would suggest you do. If you've got a board meeting coming up soon, you could do it in a board meeting. If not, you can send an email to your board or your executive board or however your board is set up. But just send an email that says, hey, these are my concerns. There's a global banking issue going on. You may think there's a problem. I don't know. But I'm concerned about our banking institution and where we have our deposits. I am going to check out. I'm going to do some due diligence and I'm going to get back to you with what I find out. Communicate to your board. These are my concerns. This is what I'm doing. I'll get back to you when I find out. And always remember that the board makes decision about policy. You make the operational decisions. So if you are, and also I would say, if you're in a board meeting, make sure the discussion is reflected in the minutes so that it's on record that you've had that discussion with the board. If you're not in a board meeting, just if you do it by email, that'll be your documentation there.
I think, Nathan, this is a really good reason why you should have a finance committee or team, or at the very least, you know, working with your treasurer. It's easy maybe when you're smaller to say, oh, we don't need this committee or we don't need this group or whatever, but it is really good. I personally meet with our treasurer on a regular basis to go over our finances, and he can, you know, give me information, encouragement, and insight. So you're not there carrying this by yourself. You need to walk with somebody in the finance. Even if you're small, it's still important to have somebody to be a part of these decisions and these thoughts as you work through them.
Yeah. And you know, Tim, this type of stuff is important, but as executive directors, it's easy to overlook this importance because you've got other stuff that's got your attention. You've got fires that you're putting out all day. You have all kinds of other things that you're trying to do. And so things like this are just not on your radar until something, you know, catches on fire. And now all of a sudden you've got this massive fire to put out and you're not really prepared to do it. So this is one of those proactive things that as executive directors, this is part of our job, is to be thinking about these things when nobody else is. As executive directors, Tim's expertise is operations. My expertise is fundraising. You know, somebody else's expertise is probably in their programming, whatever. We all have our area of expertise. So if you come from a banking background and that is an area you're strong in, or maybe your spouse is a banker, and so you have access, you know, maybe this is not a big deal. You've already had these conversations. You already know this stuff. And so, you know, maybe it's not a big deal. But if banking is not your strong suit, then you really do need to rely on experts and your board. And between those three, come up with what's best for you. Another issue to think about is, should you have multiple bank accounts? Well, let's talk about that. So if you go over $250,000 insurance amount in your bank account, if you go over that amount often or sometimes, then yeah, most likely, yes, you probably do need to look at opening an account in a different bank, not the same bank, but different bank. Now, if you're under 200, well, you know, you won't have an insurance issue. So if your bank account is never goes for 50,000, that's like, you know, on January 2nd, after the big year end fundraising push, and, you know, you've maybe hit 50,000 in your bank account once. Well, okay, then obviously you don't have to worry about the $250,000 max, but you may want to think about having all your eggs in one basket. Is it good to have everything in just one bank? You know, I don't know. That again, go back to your experts, go back to your board, have those conversations. This is a good time to be having those conversations.
Nathan, I think also this is another point of tracking your cash flow. You know, how, you know, what are the seasons? Again, if you're on a calendar year, you know that at the end of the year, you're going to get a lot more money. As you say, you're going to start the new year with an amount of money, but how does that go for the year? Is that going to stay there, or do you spend that right away? But it's important to know your cash flow, because then you can make some of those decisions.
Yeah. And I think you can also look at what is the purpose of the money. So if you have let's just call it a rainy day fund, you know, you're trying to set aside a little bit of money for, you know, a new roof, or you're setting aside some money just to have a little bit of cushion. You know, we talked in an earlier episode about having, you know, some operating capital in reserve, 3 months or 6 months or whatever the case may be. So if you have that, then, you know, maybe it makes sense to start a second banking relationship and put that rainy day fund there. Or, you know, maybe you've got a little mini endowment that you're trying to build and put that there. So that would be a way to kind of separate that risk out, to where you've got, you know, two different relationships. And so just in case something happens to one bank, you've got some funds in another bank.
I know we got to a point several years ago where we consistently had above that $250,000. And so our auditors and our financial people were saying, hey, we need, because we're consistently there, we need to take that money and put it somewhere else, again, to cover, so it's under the $250,000, you know, deposit level. So we've done things like money markets with another group and some of those kind of things. So there are ways to put that money in different places. And now with interest rates a little higher, some of it makes sense. I think it's important to realize that we as a nonprofit are not necessarily in it for the money. We don't have money. We're not in it. But it's not like we want to be risky and try to you know, be financial wizards, but we want to be good stewards of the resources that we have. And so thinking through some of this is really important.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up. And I'm a high level thinker. You know, I'm a 50,000 foot guy. I struggle with the details, and that's just my personality. So I have to have people around me that are really good with the details, because I'm not. And, you know, when it comes to this type of stuff, and interest rates have, you know, they've just gone crazy the last couple of months. And you could get, you know, where it used to be we had a money market and we got, it's like point something, something, something. Well, now you could get, you know, there's some CDs and some T-bills that are up into the 4%. And to me, I'm thinking, oh, okay, yeah, it's 4%, but is it really that much money? And it's just, it's easier for me to leave it where it is, until I think about, okay, you know, our donors gave us their hard-earned money to do good with, and I have money that's sitting in the bank because we've got a purpose for it, but it's sitting right now. So that's part of my job, is to make sure that we're doing the best stewardship with that money that we can. So if there's a move that we can make to generate more revenue for the organization so we could do more program, then I got it. I need to at least look at it and make a decision on that from a point of knowledge, as opposed to, nah, I don't want to be burdened with having to do that.
So. You brought up a point as we were talking earlier, Nathan, that as you start to diversify a little bit with your finances, it does require more accounting. You know, you have to keep track of where the money is. You know, that can be a challenge sometimes as a small nonprofit.
It is. And a great point. And this is an example of, if you are weak in your accounting ability within the org, which is common, a lot of small to medium organizations, because there's just not enough money to really have that kind of infrastructure. But it's also a choice, Tim. And I think nonprofits, especially small ones, they get into this loop of every penny goes to program, every nickel, every dime goes to program, because that's what we're here for, is to do more program, to help more people, to make a bigger difference in the world. But you can't grow without organizational infrastructure. And so if you're in a position where you can't really, you know, open another banking account because you're doing the accounting yourself and you're not very good at it and it's a burden, well, now might be the right time to go find help and take some of that money, some of those nickels and dimes, and put it into infrastructure, because you can't grow without that infrastructure. Yeah. And if you're struggling with that, if that's something that's really holding you back, for gosh sakes, reach out to us, ask us. We can help you figure that out. We can help you with your board on how to grow that infrastructure. So if you're struggling with that, I don't mean to make this a sales pitch, Tim, but gosh, if this is something you're struggling with, reach out to us, because we can help you with that.
Why don't you kind of summarize some of the key points then that we're kind of bringing up here? Where do I go from here?
All right. So if you're concerned about banking strategy, here's three, just to recap what we talked about, three simple things that you can do. One, go get expert advice. Find out for sure what the laws are in your state and how the federal banking laws impact your organization. Tim's organization, my organization, your organization, all three of us are different. And so you've got to go find out for yourself how it impacts you. In addition to the banker, you might want to consult an attorney who's knowledgeable about this. You know, it's not all attorneys are the same. You know, you wouldn't, if you have some type of a criminal charge against you, you wouldn't want to retain a tax attorney to help you. So not all attorneys are the same. Try to find one that's got some banking background that can really help you with that. All right. Number two, document the discussions with your board, either in board minutes or through an email. And again, just let them know there's a potential, there's an issue that you want to research. There's an issue that you have concern about. This is the problem. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to, you know, contact our bank and double check with them. I'm going to look at some other experts. And then when I get all of my information together, I will bring it back to you with my recommendations on what we should do. That way you're protected. The organization is protected. And that is the best way to do that. So lastly, is the sky falling here, Tim? No, the sky is not falling. Most likely your bank is fine and, you know, you're not going to have any problems. Are we taking our own advice on this? Yes. Tim and I have already started doing this. We are going through each of the steps that we just outlined and just in precaution and making sure we understand what's going on in our own personal situations.
Well, hopefully that's helpful to get you stirred up to think about how do you approach it. Again, we're not trying to create a panic, but you know, as a leader of your organization, you need to step into these situations and lead well and take time and get to know the situation and know what the best course of action is for your organization.
Yeah. And in the end, you know, we can't foresee the future and we can't fix every problem, you know, and none of us have a pay grade high enough to fix global banking problems. However, just a few simple proactive steps now might make things a lot simpler and a lot safer for you and your organization down the road.
Well, thank you for listening today. And if you're benefiting from what's being shared on this podcast, we would like to ask you to share a review on our platform. Let us know how the podcast is benefiting you. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our contact information can be found in the show notes. That's all for today. Until next time.